TUC Radio, San Francisco. Time of Useful Consciousness. Mr. George Galloway comes to San Francisco. The British Member of Parliament, George Galloway, was given an official welcome by the City of San Francisco in September 2005. Later that day, he received a standing ovation for a speech in the San Francisco Mission District. His passionate opposition to the war on Iraq, his outspoken condemnation of the policies of Tony Blair and George W. Bush, earned him the respect of the international anti-war movement and the disapproval of the British Labour Party. In October 2003, the Labour Party expelled Galloway. He had been a member for 36 years. But only a year and a half later, in May of 2005, Galloway returned to Parliament in one of the most amazing upset victories in electoral history. Standing for the Respect Party, a coalition of anti-war organizations, he was elected Member of Parliament for the East London Bethnal Green and Bow District. You are about to hear the second half of his 50-minute speech. In part one, Galloway had summed up three British-US policies that led to anger and armed resistance in the Arab world. Here to begin is a summary of these three policies from part one of the speech, followed by an eloquent description of how these policies were compounded instead of reversed. Here is George Galloway speaking freely without notes.
Iraq was broken on the wheel of sanctions and war. On what grounds? On the grounds of the unacceptability of acquiring other people's territory by force. On the grounds that United Nations Security Council resolutions must be upheld and implemented. On the grounds that no country may seek weapons of mass destruction. Yet there is no country in the world which has broken more United Nations resolutions than Sharon's Israel. There is no country in the world which has acquired more territory from other people by force and held on to it for longer than Sharon's Israel. And as we know, thanks to the brave Jewish whistleblower Mordechai Vanunu, Israel is sitting on a mountain of weapons of mass destruction, including hundreds of nuclear weapons and the missiles to deliver them. Israel is not punished for these, but rewarded endlessly by the United States taxpayer and the United States defense industries. And the second reason why that swamp of hatred is so deep appears equally difficult for the United States and Britain to grasp. And it is the policy of propping up every puppet president and corrupt king who rules the Muslim world almost without exception from one end to the other. And because of that, the Muslims don't know whether to laugh or cry when they hear Bush and Blair talking about democracy and human rights. And the third and most serious of all of the contributory factors to this swamp are the monstrous crime that was committed by you and us against the people of Iraq. At every 6 minutes of every day and night, year after year, for more than a decade, we killed 1 million Iraqi children and called it an embargo. The late Pope John Paul II called it the slaughter of the innocents. The Democratic whip on the Hill, David Bonnier of Michigan, called it infanticide masquerading as politics. Very few people in the West cared about those little Iraqi children being laid in the biggest mass grave of them all. But every Muslim in the world cared about it. Every Muslim in the world knows about it. And it's another big reason why so many hundreds of millions of people grew to hate us so intensely. So I said we need to drain this swamp by reversing these three main policies. But we didn't. We compounded every one of those crimes. We made the swamp even deeper. We compounded the crime against the people of Iraq by a massive invasion of hundreds of thousands of foreign soldiers. And we were told a pack of lies to justify it. Lies which now stand naked and exposed in front of the world to the extent that even Colin Powell, the man who went to the Security Council with his overhead projection and his telephone intercepts and dazzled the world with a display of propaganda that Joseph Goebbels would have been proud of to fool the world into the need for attacking Iraq. He said it's a stain on his reputation. You're right, Mr. Powell. It's a blood stain on your reputation and on the reputation of the entire U.S. government. They said there was weapons of mass destruction and there were none. They said Iraq was linked to 9/11 and it was not. They said that Iraq was connected to Al-Qaeda and it wasn't then, but it certainly is now. And whose fault is it that there's now Al-Qaeda all over Iraq? Bush and Blair brought Al-Qaeda into Iraq by savagely attacking it in 2003. But the biggest lie of all that they told was the one that they told to our own soldiers. When they told them that these invading armies would be welcomed by the people of Iraq with rice and flowers. And there are now 2,000 dead American boys and girls lying in the ground as testimony to that lie. There are 15,000 Americans wounded and maimed, many of them in wheelchairs for the rest of their lives, as a testimony to those lies. That 2,000 to become 10 and then 20 and then 30 and then 40,000 and then 58,000 dead like you lost in Vietnam, then you better raise your voices for the withdrawal of the American armed forces from the occupation of Iraq now. Because as I warned, and the anti-war movement warned, this gruesome twosome, Bush and Blair, who couldn't punch their own way out of a paper bag, whose own sons and daughters will never be putting on a tin hat and picking up a gun and going there. It's the sons and daughters of other mothers and fathers they send. These liars, these criminals were warned, you are opening the gates of hell with this invasion, and the Iraqis will fight you with their teeth if necessary, and for as long as is necessary until they drive you from their land. Because the Iraqi people are not less than us. It could never happen to you. But it nearly happened to us when we stood alone in 1941 against the fascist hordes at the Channel ports ready to invade us. And if Hitler had invaded our country, every person with self-respect and dignity, whether they supported Churchill or hated Churchill, would have fought the Nazi occupation of our country with every bone in their body and every breath until they had driven it from their land. And the Iraqis are not less than us. They do not love their country any less than us. So we have to get used to this. Don't tell me that if the British and Americans leave, there'll be chaos. The only person who can say that is a person who doesn't have a television set or who's never listened to the radio over these last 2 years. There is already bloodshed and chaos in Iraq, and it will not be a sufficient condition to end that for the British and American armies to withdraw, but it is a necessary condition for the British and American armies to withdraw. There will be no solution unless the British and American armies withdraw. Which brings me to a few points I need to make in conclusion. I told you earlier that one of my favorite parliamentarians was a man called Charles James Fox. His statue is the first one you come upon when you enter the British Parliament through the St. Stephen's entrance. He was twice expelled from the British Parliament. The first time for supporting the American Revolution, the great freedom struggle of the American people to kick out the colonial occupiers of their country. The second time he was expelled was for his support for the French Revolution, which admittedly was quite pointedly expressed. He tabled a resolution congratulating the people of France on the execution of their king and queen. And looking forward to the same fate befalling all the crowned heads of Europe. But just imagine going back in time and saying to Mr. Fox, "Are you sure you're doing the right thing supporting these anti-colonial revolutionaries? I mean, what if they win? What if their country ends up being run by a bunch of crazed fundamentalist fanatics like the Reverend Pat Robertson, George Bush, Dick Cheney, Donald Rumsfeld, Richard Pearl, and the rest of the gang?" Don't tell me George Bush is a follower of Jesus, because I just don't believe it. I just don't believe it. Christians believe in the prophets, peace be upon them. Bush believes in the prophets and how to get a piece of them. That's his religion. That's the religion Bush follows. But Fox would have answered, "It is for the American people alone to decide who governs their country. It is not a matter for me in the country which occupies them to dictate to them which political leaders they should follow." Now, I told you earlier I was of Irish extraction. This is very important for the coming months. When the Irish people rose at Easter time in 1916 and seized the General Post Office in O'Connell Street in Dublin and proclaimed the Irish Republic, dealing a decisive blow to the British Empire, the liberals in London, the Christopher Hitchens of their day, declined to issue a certificate of approval to the Irish revolutionaries. They said these revolutionaries are priest-ridden, bog-trotting, Celtic, Gaelic obscurantists who may take Ireland out of the empire, yes, but take it into the mists of some Celtic brigadoon. But these Hitchens of their day missed the important point that the only certificate of approval that's required was the certificate issued by the Irish people to the Irish revolutionaries, and the views of the British liberals was of no consequence whatsoever. I mention it because you will be told that you might not like the British and American occupation of Iraq, but if they withdraw, Iraq will be governed by people who don't even look like you. Well, that's something we'll have to get used to, because when the British and Americans leave, the one thing you can be sure of is that Iraq will be governed by Iraqis and not British and American generals and politicians in London and Washington. And that is how it should be. Now, I said I'd come back to Mrs. Bush Senior. Now, I don't know. I mean, I'm reading the American press now. And sorry. No, it is a sorry sight in many respects, but even in the American press, you can discern the enormous sense of shame and outrage felt in this country at the pitiful, pathetic, shameful performance by your government in the wake of the Hurricane Katrina that hit the Gulf Coast. I can see it even in the right-wing newspapers, this sense of amazement. And I'm here to tell you that for the rest of the world, who knew that the Bush administration were malevolent crooks, we now know that on top of being malevolent crooks, they're a bunch of utter, pitiful incompetents who can't even pick up the bodies of their own citizens in one of their own great cities, days and days and days after the elements have taken them. On the BBC last week, a British journalist confronted an American officer and said, "Isn't anybody going to pick up that dead body there, which I first filmed 7 days ago, and it's still lying there, despite the continual passage of American forces of one kind or another?" And the officer answered, "We have no orders to pick up dead bodies, sir." So they've got orders to create dead bodies from Afghanistan to Iraq, but no orders to pick up dead bodies in their own country, in the great city of New Orleans. I tell you, the Bush administration now stands naked in front of the whole world, and it's a very ugly sight indeed. And I believe my comrade Todd was right when he said, it's not enough to rub your hands and count the years to the next presidential election, when maybe, though it's unlikely, the Democrats will choose somebody with enough backbone to stand up to these criminals and fight them face to face on the grounds that they should. It's not enough to do that. We can't wait that long. Nixon was impeached for far less than George W. Bush is guilty of, and it's time to raise the demand. And we have a chance to do it. Cindy Sheehan and Hurricane Katrina. Cindy Sheehan and Hurricane Katrina have changed the political landscape here in the United States of America. If the Democrats had any guts, they'd be capitalizing on it now instead of hiding from it, because they're complicit in it on both counts. And in Britain, the landscape has shifted too. Yes, Tony Blair won re-election, but he lost half of his majority. He's lost more than half of his members. He lost 1 million votes, and his reputation is utterly destroyed. No one believes a word that he has to say, and in the history books, he'll be remembered for nothing other than having gotten into the back seat of a drunk driver's car who drove it over a cliff and caused the deaths of a very large number of people without having reached the bottom yet. I brought my comrade all the way from Scotland to remind me that I didn't finish the point about Barbara Bush. When the French Queen, that Charles James Fox congratulated the French people for executing, was told that the masses in France were rising for they had no bread, she answered, Marie Antoinette answered, then why don't they eat cake? Wasn't that really what Barbara Bush was saying when she went to that Astrodome and told these poor people there that they'd never had it so good? Underprivileged people being fed with bread handouts in an Astrodome, and her main worry about them was that too many of them wanted to stay on in Texas once it was all over. These Bourbon Bushes and the Bourbon Blair have to face, metaphorically speaking, alas, the same fate as the Bourbons before them. And we are the people who have to do it. In the last 2 days, the landscape in Britain has begun to shift in a landslide as a result of the events in Basra, which some of you will have read about, though I've not been able to find it in many American papers so far, where British soldiers dressed up as Arabs, reportedly carrying explosives on their way to do God knows what, though we can speculate, can't we? Drove through a roadblock and killed some Iraqi policemen, were arrested and taken to prison, a prison which was then invaded by British tanks who smashed it down to rescue the two undercover British soldiers in defiance even of the puppet regime that we ourselves installed there. And those tanks were then set on fire by the furious masses of the city of Basra, who will not accept their country being treated as a colonial possession. And I said, and I've been saying since the fall of Baghdad, which I warned them would not be the beginning of the end, but merely the end of the beginning, that the British forces in the south of Iraq were just one fatwa away from a terrible disaster, a bloodbath. The blood, of course, not of Blair, but of the young men he sent on a lie to stand there in amidst these very angry people in the south of Iraq. And today, on Sky News, the Fox equivalent, owned by Rupert Murdoch, on a program Bill O'Reilly would be pleased to host, they held a poll, and 86% of the respondents said, bring the British Army home from Iraq right away, right away. So I tell you, If I may be allowed to quote Lenin in an American high school, Lenin said, "There are decades when nothing happens, but there are weeks when decades happen. We're heading for those weeks. We can make those weeks. We have to seize those weeks. You and me, the Americans and the British together, have to rise up and sweep these criminals out of power before they do any more damage." Wassalamu alaikum. Thank you very much indeed.
George Galloway, British Member of Parliament, receiving a standing ovation at Mission High School in San Francisco in late September 2005. You heard the second part of a 50-minute speech. In May of 2005, the U.S. Senate Committee on Homeland Security and Governmental Affairs accused Galloway of having taken kickbacks from the Iraqi government. In his testimony before the committee, Galloway turned the table on his accusers, saying they sent American soldiers to their deaths for a pack of lies about weapons of mass destruction. He also asked who had taken the $8.8 billion of Iraq's wealth that went missing in the first 14 months of occupation, and said that U.S. corporations such as Halliburton, stole not only from the Iraqis, but from the U.S. taxpayers. You can find out more about George Galloway on TUC Radio's website, www.tucradio.org. That's tucradio.org. Look under newest programs. You can get information how to order a copy of George Galloway's speech by calling us. TUC Radio is free to all radio stations. Your tape or CD order is our only support and is essential for keeping us on the air. Call us toll-free anytime at 877-TUC-TAPE for information on how to order. You can get your tape or CD by mail or credit card, by phone, or on the web. Our toll-free phone number 877-TUC-TAPE translates into 1-877-882-8273. My name is Mariah Gilardin. Thank you for listening. Give us a call.